Okay, Brian is going to speak now on page 124, and I'll let him tell you about that page. Go ahead, Brian.
All right, thank you. Good morning, everybody, or good evening, I guess, right? See some familiar faces on here. That's nice. Jeffrey, love you, buddy. Well, Carol, thank you for asking me to speak, and I'm honored to speak, and I'll do whatever I can to speak whenever I'm asked. Jeffrey knows I have a rule. I don't stand up and share in a meeting, or I don't share at a meeting unless I'm called on, because I suffer from a big ego. And so if my ego thinks it has something to add value to, typically it is only making sense to my committee upstairs, unless I'm called on when I'm not prepared, then I know that the Holy Spirit will kind of speak through me. So I love the fact that I had a little bit of notice, but yet I have a lot of experience, so I don't really have to, you know, sit and think about too much. I just prepare and meditate about this. So I'm going to just get right into it. So I started my recovery journey in 2005. At that time, I was 11 years into my marriage. My wife and I had two daughters and a son. The son I inherited, Leanne had been married. If you've heard my wife speak, some of you may know Leanne. Her sponsor is Tylus C. And my sponsor is a gentleman by the name of Nathan Jones. And Nathan is also sponsored by Tylus C. But in 2005, when we got into the rooms for the first time together, Leanne and I, it was not her first trip into recovery, but it was my first trip into it. And so I just came in eyes wide open, not knowing what I was going to be getting myself into, other than she had hit a bottom in her alcoholism. And I did not know I had a part in any of it. I did not know I had any isms of my own at that time. I thought I was just a good husband trying to rescue and save and control and manipulate his alcoholic wife. I come from parents, alcoholic parents, and so I'm an adult child of alcoholics. And I didn't really notice anything about that growing up. I was sharing the other night about this same topic, and I shared that my upbringing was, my life was kind of like a party. My parents were functioning alcoholics. All my friends were pretty much alcoholic or partiers. I actually was able to, you know, put together a good life, a career. And I looked like I had it all together on the outside. But on the inside, you know, I was restless, irritable, and discontent like the alcoholic. But I didn't know what my drug of choice was back then. Today, I can tell you that, you know, validation is what calms me down. So my adrenaline gets me going until I have to either win the argument or someone shuts me down by just telling me, hey, Brian, you might be right. Or just touch me and tell me I'm awesome. You know, that's the kind of ego I had. And so, and I picked that up somewhere growing up with this lifestyle there. I didn't have rules. You know, I didn't have curfews when I was growing. My sister did. My sister had all kinds of curfews, but I didn't have any. I had a job. I was interested in sports. I was just interested in just friends and having a good time, going to the river and doing all the fun things that high school kids did. I didn't really have that that allergy with the alcohol that my wife had. You know, she could not stop, and I didn't understand that. So in this journey, I get in 2005. I'm encouraged by my church to, for my daughter's sake, to go to Al-Anon meetings and then maybe introduce them to Alateen. They were 10 and 12 at this time. Actually, in 2005, McKenna, our oldest, was 11, and Brooke was 9. And then they started in private Christian education. So immediately, our daughters were kind of immersed into a different culture than what I was raised in. All of a sudden, they had friends with rules. They had friends with different kinds of goals. And they began to focus on the same types of goals as a lot of their friends, which my goals with my friends were, you know, let's get to the weekend and have fun. Same with Leanne. So I get into these rooms, I go to Al-Anon, and I didn't really have a good experience in my first few Al-Anon meetings, if I'm honest. I think I was expecting something other than what I walked into, and nothing against it. It was just more of a, I think the meeting I went to just wasn't right for me, because it was filled with mostly people who were complaining about their qualifier was still out there actively in their addiction. And mine was not. Mine was making an effort, a serious effort to get sober. And I knew where she was, and she was at home and living as if she needed a drink, but she was sober and she was learning what AA had to offer her. And so I just went all in. Fast forward, 2010, 5 years into recovery, Leanne went off the deep end, hit a real bottom. She found a bottom that got her into AA, but she hit a dry drunk bottom that took her out again. She didn't lose her sobriety for alcohol, but she just relapsed in every area of her life. She no longer wanted to be a mom. She no longer wanted to be married. She bailed out of the family. She abandoned me and my daughters, and she did, you know, she took off. And that was a scary time for me, but that was also a time when I finally hit, I would say, my bottom. My bottom was being alone, being abandoned. That feeling of, now what do I do? And I did not like to fail. I didn't want my marriage to fail. I promised my wife when we got married and her parents that I would only get married one time. She had already been married previously. And that was my thing. In that bottom for her, when we were separated, she found a meeting that when she went to this meeting, we were not together at the time, but she heard Tylus C. share. And that was a big book awakening meeting. I had no idea she went to it. I was not with her at the time, but she called me for the first time, pretty excited after that meeting, and shared with me that she had met a woman that she was going to stalk until she became her sponsor and was going to show her the way to go through the steps. And immediately when the lady learned that Leanne was married, she treated her like the recovered woman she is. She said, you go back home, you be a mother, you get married, you get back into your marriage and you fix things and you get right. And so she began to do that. And when she began to do that, what happened was, is I got invited into the BBA club for the first time. And now I was starting to hear people share real shares that I could begin to identify with. And so I began to walk through this journey of this big book awakening. And I've got my book open here to the page, because up until that point, my painful past was not my past yet. It was still painful. It was still present. And I was in this world of the storm that I had not seen the other side yet. I wasn't experiencing what I know today as to be the promises of the ninth step. I didn't know anything about the bedevilments. I didn't know anything about, you know, really what my painful past meant, because I wasn't aware of it, because I had not inventoried it yet. And so so I set out on this journey. And as I started to go through the steps for myself for the first time, I started to ask myself the same questions that Leanne was asking herself with her ism. I learned that I had all the bedevilments. I was having problems in my personal relationships, couldn't make a real living. I thought I was. I kept it really good on the outside. You would have thought I had it all together. I was going to church. I had this beautiful family. I had a car. I had a house. But I was a wreck on the inside. I was isolated in the middle of 1,000 people. So my mind would not, it would hold me hostage, just like the prayer says, right? Relieve me of the bondage of self. I was always in bondage. I was always being held hostage in no matter where I was. I could not think past that day. Peace and serenity to me were not present in my life. I did not have any peace and serenity. The only peace and serenity I had was when the girls were asleep, the bills were paid, and Leanne was at home asleep, and I could just have a glass of wine and watch some sports. Like, that was my peace. And that only lasted a few hours because then I was sound asleep, and then the rinse repeat the next day. So this next line here, so Henry Ford, right? This is who makes this comment. Henry Ford once made a wise remark to the effect that experience is a thing of supreme value in life. That is true only if one is willing to turn their past into a good account. So I learned this for the first time as I jumped in and started to do a workshop with my wife. Actually, Leanne was leading the workshop. I was the co-leader. I was talking to the chaos creators, controllers, fixers, rescuers, you know, that person, porn addiction, other things like that. She was doing alcoholism and drugs. And so I walked through my first workshop, and through there, I started to practice what it says here. We grow by our willingness to face and rectify errors and convert them into assets. So I did not know that everything I went through, that I had to go through, would become an asset. Like, how does that even, like, bankruptcy, how's that an asset, right? Being cheated on, how's that an asset? You know, all these things, I'm looking at them like, being abandoned, how is that an asset? But the moment I started to actually learn that what this meant was, is that when I can sit across from another, right, nothing will ensure immunity for the alcoholic than working with another alcohol. Well, for me, nothing will ensure my immunity than working with another person who suffers from the same types of storms and things that I've gone through. And I share how what I went through is now an asset. I would not change a thing today that I went through because of what I know today. So this past, right, in this case, talking about the family to the alcoholic, the alcoholic's past thus becomes the principal asset of the family, and frequently it is almost the only one. So in the beginning, when you're going through this, the only thing that you really have is the ability to just sit across from somebody and help them and talk about your painful past and share where they are, you've been there, and let them know that there's nothing you absolutely can do to get yourself out of this, because that's what gets you in trouble. That's what was getting me in trouble. I had to learn that my common sense needed to be my uncommon sense. My common sense would rescue me, save me. I would repeat, rinse, repeat, get myself back into a situation where I didn't want to be until, you know, I had this willingness to face it and grow. And then I learned the next part of this. And in my book, I don't know if you can see it, but I've got these two highlighted here. They're asterisked in my book and underlined. It says, this painful past may be of infinite value to other families still struggling with their problem. Boom. All right. That I could live with. Because I did struggle. I was living in this infinite challenge of not knowing how to get out of it. And then the moment I started like meeting people like Jeffrey, who was a blessing in my life, the more he shared where he was, the more I realized I had overcome and come from that same place. And I have gentlemen all over the world and locally that I meet with, and I was going through, and there's fruit in my life today that is a blessing from just giving away all of this stuff that I had gone through. And it's true, these assets, right? Showing others who suffer how we were given help in this very thing, which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past, my dark past, is now my greatest possession, the key to life and happiness for others. With you can avert death and misery for them. All I got to do is give this away. All I got to do is be a good listener. All I've got to do is sit down and exercise grace and mercy and listen to somebody else tell me exactly what's going on in their life. Be very still, be very quiet, and then be guided, not by what I want to say, but what I'm led to say by listening intently to what it is, because God will remind me of some things I went through, and they'll come back to surface when I least likely expect them to, but they're to help that other person. And that's why I was talking about my ego. My ego will rebuild if I want to say to Jeffrey, as an example, or Adam, a guy in Canada I go through, or this gentleman in Australia that I talk to, or Jamie, who sits across from me when I talk to him. And if I'm wanting to say what I feel like, I'm going to miss the mark. They're going to be confused, and it's not going to do anything for them. Other than just sounding like crap to me, it won't be of value to you. And so I have to be very still. I have to follow the instructions of this book, and I have to listen and be guided. Because today, I learned that from all my inventory, all my fears kept me from a better life. I didn't have one fear on my fear grid that was a promise to have a better life. So I had to find every single fear that I had as an objectionable fear, to the point where I find it objectionable that I have fear still. They keep coming up in various ways. Sometimes they're, you know, an accident on the freeway. You're like, "Whoa, what was I thinking before I almost got in that," or whatever. And, but those are valuable tools today. But I wasn't aware that I had such a problem internally getting myself out of trouble. I thought I was good at it. I was like, leave it to Beaver. What's his name? Eddie Haskell. Mrs. Cleaver would walk in the room. "Hi, Mrs. Cleaver. Everything's fine. Everything's rosy." She leaves and I'm flicking Beaver's ear, and I'm just a pain in the butt. And I'm just like this guy again, who just like can't control himself, because I had no rules growing up. And I had to find all of that objectionable, because there's no fruit in that. There's fun in it for a while, but then the fun doesn't turn into anything substantial. So this chapter today is the supreme, and for me, it's the one chapter that's the most important chapter for Brian to be able to live a great life, to be a great husband, is to realize that everything I had to go through was not for me. It was for someone else. But I had to be able to listen to where they're at, to be guided to say, okay, I've been there and I did not have answers. I could not get out. And they can't get out. They're stuck and I can't unstick them, but I know who can. And that's God, this higher power that we all need. I needed to find a power greater than myself that solves all my problems. The only way I could solve all my problems was to listen to somebody else who had wisdom in an area that their problems now became their assets, and they could give me their assets. And they would confirm, "Brian, you're screwed. There's nothing you can do to get out of this." There's like, you can take baby steps and get yourself out of it, but those baby steps are going to be, how's your 10 and 11? Are you praying and meditating? Are you working with others? Are you going to meetings? Are you being of real help? Are you having problems in any of your person? Where are you in the bedevilments? Where are you? Are you in a step one experience? Are you somewhere in between step one or step 11 or step 12 again? I found that this chapter is just the same thing. It's like, okay, am I being of maximum service to my fellows, or am I not? And the very end of this, where it talks about the key to life and happiness for others. So if I make you, my others, the most important part of my day, then my day is going to be amazing, because I'm no longer focused on what it is I want to focus on. I'm focused on what it is I can do for somebody else. And then everything around me just gets better and better and better. I was talking to my wife yesterday, and 24 months ago, when the pandemic hit, we had 3 kids, 1 house, and we both worked. 24 months later, through the pandemic, I have 5 kids, because 2 of my daughters got married. So now I have 2 son-in-laws. So I have 5 kids. I have a grandbaby. I have another grandbaby on the way. We have 3 houses. I have no idea how any of this happened. I have no idea. All I know is we had so much time through the pandemic that all we've done is doing what we're doing right now, just having meetings, and things just keep getting better. And the fruit of my life today, the only way I can explain the fruit of my life today is because I found a higher power who I like to call God. And in this case, my wife and I are non-denominational Christians. We attend an amazing spirit-filled church that pours into us. We run an Awaken Recovery. We had a meeting last night. We have a workshop meeting very similar with Pastor Morgan Irvin. If any of you know Morgan, Morgan's big proponent of BVA for many years. So we're working with Morgan and a guy named Mark Gagarin and his wife, and we're running a ministry in a church right now that is fulfilling us. And the church is recognizing the fruit in our lives today has come from this wreckage that we had to go through to be broken and now be restored because of what we're doing and what we're talking about right now. It's just being willing to give away something and add value back into other people's lives. And if you've ever wanted the fruit of your life to explode, just get out of your way, sit across from somebody, let them trust you, be honest with you, tell you something that you have no idea how to answer, and just sit and quietly listen, and then just say what comes to mind and watch what happens on the person's face across from you. Because when Jeffrey and I talk, there's stuff that comes from me that is, I know it is not from me. I know it's not from me. And that is the greatest gift he can give me, is just by being my buddy and all of you for listening to me today. So I think my time just ran out, or it's really close. And thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Brian. That was great. I'm going to stop the recording.